morning, Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Today is Thursday, September 24th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Well, we've got the results of last night's Clatsop County Commissioners meeting in Astoria.
And an interview with a Jewell High School student who wrote a controversial editorial about liquefied natural gas.
And protests in Pittsburgh at the G20 summit are rivaled in ire by developing nations' anger at Western bankers.
Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy this morning and then partly sunny this afternoon. I don't know what the difference is there. Highs in the 70s tonight, cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 40s, and then more or less the same for the next few days.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Will history never outlive the crime of just following orders? Yesterday, Portland Police Chief Rosie Sizer announced that officers acted within policy when they chased and then struggled with James Chassie, the mentally ill man who died in police custody 3 years ago. Sizer, however, recommended that Sergeant Kyle Nice be suspended for not directing an ambulance to take James Chassie to the hospital immediately after he was shot by a stun gun. Failing to do so is, in point of fact, failure to follow orders. So it seems this all boils down to which orders a police officer chooses to follow.
True story from the Lake Oswego Review, quote, following up on a report of screaming at a residence on McVeigh Avenue, an officer defused the situation by assisting in the making of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, unquote. Sometimes all it takes is a sandwich.
Well, sometimes it all takes is a sandwich. That's right. The question remains, though, is that in fact policy? And last night in Astoria, there was a meeting of the Clatsop County Commissioners. There was a protest, a rally at 4:30. And we will be having, be joined by Olivia Schmidt with Columbia Riverkeeper and also Oregon Chapter of the Sierra Club. She'll be with us this morning, perhaps a little bit later in the show.
When it comes time to write the history of environmentalism in Cascadia, the book might well be dedicated to U.S. District Court Judge James Redden. Redden wants to hear from you on the Obama administration's plan for Northwest Salmon. The state of Oregon, the Nez Perce tribe, and salmon advocates can file responses until October 2nd. The administration will then have 2 weeks to submit its reply to those responses. The administration must convince Judge Redden it meets the requirements of the Endangered Species Act. When the Oregonian says, quote, most of the basin states and tribes support the plan, what it means is the power industry supports it.
That's right, because people haven't, environmentalists, conservationists, and property owners who are affected haven't had a chance to weigh in. It seems that October 2nd, it doesn't give people very much time to organize their thoughts and come up with the really serious questions that need to be asked, although those questions, of course, have been hovering over Cascadia for quite a while. Mm-hmm. In Seaside, a few weeks ago, an article appeared in the J, that's the Jewell High School newspaper. The piece took on the question of siting liquefied natural gas terminals and pipelines in Oregon. No other state wants this stuff on the West Coast, and even Mexico has turned down a dirty, dangerous, and out-of-date industry. Considering the strong emotions on either side of the debate, writing and publishing an editorial of this nature was really an act of courage in journalism. Joining me this morning is Zach Rosnick, editor of The J. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I understand that you wrote this, you wrote an article, it was critical of LNG, it immediately drew tremendous anger on the part of the husband of Anne Samuelson, one of the Clatsop County commissioners, who is being recalled for failing to represent her constituents' demands. But you've decided to move on and take journalism to the next step. Where are you going with the J now? What's your next project?
Well, right now we're going to keep all of our normal articles, like we're going to have music reviews and technology reviews, and we're also doing editorials on teen sleep, school starting at 9 o'clock, iPods at and education and how that works, different healthcare views, and religion in school.
So how was your editorial policy affected by this huge dust-up that resulted from the LNG editorial? Has anything changed?
I think it actually encouraged us to go further and actually go for more controversial things and go further into our reviews and stuff for the paper.
So you would you be willing to be a guest on Air Cascadia again in the future and talk about some of the issues that you see affecting your community, your school, and Cascadia at large?
Yeah, I believe that'd be great.
That would be wonderful. I have to say that looking through the Oregonian and various other papers of record around the region, your editorial showed the most courage. It was well-researched. It was fair. And I think it's interesting to note that a high school newspaper was willing to take on the powers that be. And we definitely want to say well done for that. Thank you so much. My guest today has been Zach Rozenek, editor of Jewell High School's newspaper, The Jay. We hope that Zach will be able to join us again on Air Cascadia in the very near future.
It's cap and trade, only played with water instead of pollutants. It's the Bonneville Environmental Foundation's latest idea for restoring the once thriving Northwest streams it destroyed in its endless quest to make more money. The program essentially pays water rights holders to leave the water in the stream. Because rights are based on a use-it-or-lose-it model, many users continue to draw water even if they don't need it, rather than lose their claim. The program allows them to stop using the water without losing their rights and get compensated.
The EPA is suing California-based VF Outdoor Incorporated, North Face's parent company. North Face has been selling shoes marketed as antibacterial. This, of course, violates federal pesticide laws. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency filed a lawsuit over company claims that North Face footwear containing a specially treated footbed would prevent disease-causing bacteria and fungus. The EPA helpfully points out that, quote, unverified public health claims can lead people to believe that they are protected from disease-causing organisms, when in fact they may not be. Close quotes. Now, if someone would just come up with hats that prevent stupidity.
Affordable housing, tax breaks, and an elephant, Nick Fish, walk into a bar. No one notices the elephant. In 2003, Museum Place South opened as a model of how the city and private developers could finance affordable housing for low-income Portlanders. Now, 6 years later, these types of public-private partnerships are typical in city-backed developments that aim to be part of the affordable housing mix. But now Multnomah County's tax assessor has notified developers that they no longer will get the tax break for commercial space in those buildings. Without appeal to instinctive greed, there's little moral or ethical will to move planned projects forward.
And on the subject of instinctive greed, the Clatsop County Commissioners met last night in Astoria. The meeting was preceded by a rally against liquefied natural gas, citing it along our rivers, our shores, and running its pipelines through our national forests. Good morning. My guest this morning is Olivia Schmidt with Columbia Riverkeeper and the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club. Olivia, you were there. Tell us what happened.
Hi, thanks. Sorry to not be with you before. Yesterday 100 people gathered in downtown Astoria to protest LNG development in that area and tell the Clatsop County commissioners that they didn't want them to continue to make decisions bending over backward to accommodate Bradwood Landing LNG pipeline. After that, the Clatsop County commissioners voted 4-1 to rezone a piece of land that would allow the Bradwood Landing LNG pipeline, where 1 year ago Clatsop County voters voted 67% not to allow the pipeline to go. The most egregious example of poor government over corporate greed we're seeing right now in LNG development in Oregon.
It's absolutely incredible. The LNG interests, which of course are out of state interests, are driving policy making.
Absolutely.
It's breathtakingly unethical. And the fact that it hasn't drawn more outrage and anger astonishes me. We've had Zach Rosenick, editor of the J, the Jewell High School newspaper, which wrote, the only article, serious editorial, that was substantially critical of LNG. This is a high school newspaper.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we demonstrated yesterday with 100 people coming out in the middle of a work day, you know, to Astoria to say, we don't want to stand for this. Our state, our natural resources, our lands, our forests, our rivers are at stake. And the government keeps rolling over in this county to allow this thing to go through, you know, opposing public opinion and the popular vote.
There's so much more very likely going on beneath the surface, not wishing to stir up conspiracy notions.
The damage to the Columbia River alone is enough to see that this project should not be going through.
And, of course, the money flows to corporate interests and the gas flows to California. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Olivia Schmidt with Columbia Riverkeeper and the Sierra Club. Thanks again, Olivia.
Thank you.
Currently, no wildfires are burning out of control in our nation's capital, unless you count right-wing pundits' panties. So why is it that nearly $3 million in stimulus money targeted for fighting wildfires is being spent to restore public parks and watersheds in Washington, D.C.? The Forest Service has directed that $2.8 million in wildland fire management funds, approved under the economic stimulus law, go to groups that will create so-called green jobs in the District of Columbia. Western lawmakers are smoking mad about it. A huge wildfire in Southern California blackened nearly 250 square miles of the Angeles National Forest, and lesser fires are raging across western states even as we speak.
And now we go to Pittsburgh to check in with Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center. There are protests going on against the G20 summit right now, even as we speak. Good morning, Melissa. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Good morning.
Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in Pittsburgh this morning?
Sure. Well, there's been a lot happening all week, actually, and for the past month, for that matter. But so the G20 officially started today, their meetings. And so there are a lot of things that are happening. There's been a People's Summit, which has a number of workshops, panel discussions, and whatnot. There's another group called People's Voices, which actually tonight from 6:30 to 8:30 is scheduling a public trial. It's called the People's Tribunal. And this is deciding whether our individuals and leaders are making decent development policies, and there's going to be a jury for that. Something else that's actually happening this afternoon at 2:30 is the Pittsburgh G20 Resistance Project has organized an unpermitted march, which is starting in one of our neighborhoods and then going downtown onto the convention center as close as they can get. Biggest thing, of course, is actually tomorrow on Friday at noon. We have the People's March that's scheduled, and that's permitted, and we're going to have 6 feeder marches leading into that as well from all over the town.
How many people do you expect will turn out for the People's March?
We've actually heard all sorts of numbers. So at this point, I'm going to guess somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000, which is still, you know, a big stretch. But I know at the center here, we've received a lot of phone calls from people who are coming into town just for the day from all around the state, actually.
I see that Noah Williams, a spokesman for the Pittsburgh G20 Resistance Project, says that the city bought 1,000 canisters of tear gas. It seems that if you buy something, you're going to use it. Has there been any aggression on the part of the police?
Well, there certainly has been aggression on local law enforcement, and local in this sense means city and all the state law enforcement they brought in as well, and then of course the federal folks too. But so there's been aggression, not necessarily utilizing the tear gas yet, but for the past several months actually there's been aggression. Actually last night in Oakland, where we have a lot of schools and universities, it was just like a fascist war zone, just the number of people, like the state police folks who were there. And then actually this morning, apparently, downtown was something of a ghost town. There were, like, tanks kind of rolling through various parts of it as well.
Well, yes, welcome to the United States of America, other nations. Apparently, developing nations are about as esteemed with Western bankers and financiers as the protesters are this time around.
Very much so.
Anything you'd like to just say in closing? We're pretty much up against our time limit.
I don't think so. I think just you know, keep watching the news and, you know, keep looking at Pittsburgh. I think that the G20 in and of itself doesn't get nearly enough coverage nationally or internationally.
Or we want to say to our listeners, of course, independent news sources. Thanks again for that, Melissa. My guest has been Melissa Minnick with the Thomas Merton Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where the G20 summit is taking place right now.
This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, September 24th, 2009. Engineering is Emily Young. Back from a well-earned sabbatical, a refreshed and rejuvenated Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director, ably assisted by Trillium Shannon. The indefatigable Chris Andre is producing. I'm Liam Delta.
I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to All Natural, Free Range, non-syndicated KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. KBOO.fm on the web. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members, and welcome all of you who are planning to become new members very, very soon.
Coming up next, Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein brings us interviews from Honduras, including a brief interview with President Zelaya. Nora Barrows-Friedman interviews Rashid Khalidi about the situation for Palestinians in the context of the meeting of Obama, Netanyahu, and Abbas in New York City on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.